Now, I would like to ask Professor Alian Mayhew from the University of Sussex to wrap up things and also to answer to the question, to what extent the implementation of DCFTA can contribute to the development of the middle class and to break this oligarchic structure, which is somehow a problem for democratization in Ukraine and for the economic development of Ukraine. Professor Mayhew, floor is yours.
Thank you very much. At the end of this morning's session with our politicians, I was close to slitting my wrists. I hope you notice that we economists are really quite optimistic people, even though economics is called the dismal science. So I hope that's something you'll all take home with you. I'm not sure I'm going to do what our chairman actually asked, although I'll try and answer the question somehow. I thought it was worthwhile looking at a couple of things. One is, why do the Ukrainians think they are more important to the EU than they really are? And why do many of the EU member states underestimate the importance of Ukraine to the future of the EU? And then I thought it was worthwhile spending a little bit of time developing this theme of why is Ukraine going to change in the same way that Poland changed. I should say politicians have to deal with today's problems. That's quite clear. Sometimes they tend to neglect the medium and longer term. And some of these changes and these processes take a long term to function. And I'll tell a very short story about that. In the early 1980s, when some of you weren't yet born, I was working in the cabinet of a commissioner in the commission in Brussels, and my head of cabinet said to me one day, Alan, why are you wasting your time spending so much time in Dublin and Belfast on the Irish problems and in Gdansk on Poland? Ireland and Poland are hopeless cases, and they'll never get better, and you should spend your time doing something worthwhile. And I raise that always with him and some of my other Brussels friends. Some of these processes do take a long time, and anyone who comes today to Poland knows that it was all worth it in the longer term. Okay, what is the importance of Ukraine to the EU? Well, if you look at it in a purely static manner, you say, well, Ukraine is not a significant trading partner of the EU. It's slightly more significant to some member states than others. But if you take total EU trade, it's around 1%, I guess, of total EU trade. So it's really pretty insignificant. It's, of course, significant because a lot of our gas comes through Ukraine. But, you know, we've just opened Nord Stream to bypass not just Ukraine, but also Poland. And Poland is going to export shale gas to all of us in the medium term. So maybe its role as a gas transit country is also not going to last. It's not a significant destination for EU FDI, foreign direct investment. There has not been very much foreign direct investment from the EU to Ukraine. Faces quite significant economic challenges over the short and the medium term. I mean, the economic challenges which are facing Ukraine, I guess, in the next 2 or 3 years are really very significant indeed, not things you'd want to really have to deal with. And it's also a low priority on the EU list of economic and political priorities. I mean, there are one or two minor things going on, like the euro crisis and so on, which tend to be more important on EU agendas than Ukraine. However, remember that Ukraine is very important, more important to some member states than others. So for a country like Poland, or for any country, what happens in your neighbour's country is incredibly important. And so for some of the member states of the EU, not really, I guess, for the United Kingdom, but then Europe might not be important for the United Kingdom. Or Ireland, you know, it's not so important. But for Poland, it's very important. But of course, that's very short term and very static. In the medium and longer term, what happens in Ukraine is of very considerable importance to the EU as a whole, and not just to Poland. I mean, the EU has lots of things going for it. It has a developed industrial base, in need of modernization, of course, but it's still there. Potentially, it's a major consumer market. It's a major agricultural resource. And then we have all of those non-economic factors, which our politicians know more about than I do, in terms of its strategic importance and the politics of it. So statically and in the short term, really, Ukraine shouldn't overestimate its importance to the EU. And in the longer term, the EU should certainly not underestimate Ukraine's importance as a stable neighbour integrating into the EU. Let me just spend a couple of minutes on whether Ukraine can follow Poland's example. I mean, Poland is something like a miracle. I mean, when I first came to Poland, I think the person who invited me spent almost all his petrol ration driving me from Gdansk Airport to Gdansk Center. So, you know, we are dealing with a miracle, and we're dealing with the best example. If you look at how Poland has caught up on the EU 15 average, Poland has now passed Hungary, which the Hungarians always consider themselves the best candidates for accession, because developments in Poland have been extremely, extremely rapid. If you look at the free trade agreement, the DCFTA and the association agreement that have just been negotiated, and the Europe agreement with Poland, of course there are major differences. We have many more policies now in the EU. Lots of things have moved on, but basically they're aiming at the same thing. They're basically aiming at transferring the basic elements of a market economy to neighbouring countries of the EU. This is what the Germans call Ordnungspolitik, and which is tremendously important. Things like competition policy, things like the control of state aids, intellectual property protection, and so on and so forth. So the two agreements are not, if you like, radically different. Why did Poland succeed? Well, Poland succeeded because it wanted to reform totally independently of the EU. When I first came to work with the Polish government, Balcerowicz was still finance minister, and I think he's been sort of badly treated in general in public in Poland, because the reform program that the Polish government had really set Poland on the path to reform. And then this was, if you like, supported by Poland's gradual integration into the EU. There was consensus in the population, more or less, at least before they knew what reform meant, that things had to change. So there was a degree of consensus. We had a revolution with a fairly large consensus among the population. It's quite interesting that it took foreign investors quite a long time, in spite of all of this reform and in spite of the fact that we were all talking about Poland. It took investors a good 5 or 6 years before they got confident about Poland. If you look at foreign direct investment in Poland, it didn't do very much until about 1995. So it takes time. You shouldn't judge everything on what's going on this year, what's going on next year. It takes time, and the world needs to be sure that you are really reforming. Because of the reforms that were obviously serious, backed by the majority of the population, in Poland, foreign direct investment became an incredibly important part of the development of Poland through the 1990s into the current or the last decade. Foreign direct investment was absolutely essential, And it helped to lead to rapidly rising productivity, rapid growth of the economy, and all the rest of it, we know. Foreigners invested because it was totally clear that Poland was going to reform thoroughly. Obviously, it helped that they knew that Poland was aiming to become a member of the European Union. But I think the key thing was the determination of the government and the consensus amongst the people that it was going to reform. And, of course, then EU integration became an extremely strong external anchor for reform. We watched time and time again Polish ministers going to the same and saying, look, guys, I know this is hurting. I know you don't want to do it. But, you know, if we don't do it, we're not going to make it to EU, to the EU. And so, you know, we better agree it. So how are those lessons going to pan out in Ukraine? Well, Ukraine, I don't think, ever had a revolution. I mean, in Poland, there was a sort of complete break. And life was miserable and life was dreadful. And you had to do something. So there was a revolution. Ukraine didn't really, I think, have that. Ukraine never had a thoroughgoing reform program. It was understandable in a way. You know, the first years had to be really proving that Ukraine was an independent country. So you had to think about developing all the institutions of an independent country. But there was never a thorough economic reform program which was credible to the public. There was therefore no competition, or very weak competition, well, basically no competition policy. There was little control of state aids, and so you had the development of the insider economy, which is going to be an extremely difficult element in economic reform in Poland to overcome. So for all these reasons, because you didn't have the same thorough reform, which, okay, it's related to EU integration, but it was really sort of became in the genes in Poland. Because you didn't have this thorough reform, Ukraine remains, as everyone said, at the bottom of the World Bank doing business table, low down on the Transparency International table, all of those things that everybody brings up all the time. And most importantly, it's been fairly unsuccessful in attracting foreign direct investment, which could make a really big difference to the course of Ukraine's development. Now, the question is, can the DCFTA, can the association agreement, have the same impact on Ukraine as the association agreement, or the Europe agreement, had on Poland? Well, looking back to Poland, if it's going to have the same effect, you need strong political leadership, which is intent on reform and capable of tackling gradually but steadily the insider economy. That means competition policy, that means state aid control, and so on. You need major institutional reform. And don't think that institutional reform is something you can do overnight. I can remember some of my Polish colleagues tearing their hair out because it was so difficult to reform institutions here through the 1990s. So you need major institutional reform. You need modernization of the education system. One of the things that happened in Poland was that there was an enormous expansion in education, especially in educational institutions which were keen on teaching students about EU, about integration, about the acquis communautaire, and so on. And it strikes me that in Ukraine you really need a major reform of the educational system so that young generations, because after all, you know, it's the young who are going to drive this reform through, that you have good young people ready to take significant posts in private and public sector. You need significant financial resources. I don't want to get into that because I noticed on the bios I'm down there as advising the budget commissioner in the commission. And you need a strong external anchor because it is very difficult for politicians to drive through reforms which are unpopular unless there is a strong external anchor. Chairman, I'm almost through. If we look at whether Ukraine meets all of those conditions, Well, the strong external anchor is missing. I mean, the strong external anchor was, for Poland, EU integration, accession. For Ukraine, it's less. I mean, there is an external anchor, and the agreement will be monitored, and there will be reports written and pressure brought and so on. But it's a slightly different external anchor. The institutions have not been reformed yet, there is an EU, a big EU program to help with institution reform. And under institutions, there's the judiciary. And if you don't have the judiciary working properly, I can't see even Polish enterprises wanting to invest. The insider rent-seeking economy still exists, and it needs to develop into a competitive entrepreneurial economy. The education system, as I say, needs reform. And the economic climate for reform is different. If you think back to the 1990s, beginning of the last decade, the economic climate was really relatively positive. I mean, we were going into a period of liberalization. And now we're asking Ukraine to do all of these changes in a period which is much more difficult, when, you know, we spend most of our time worrying about sovereign bond spreads and all sorts of things like that. So the economic climate is less straightforward. So my conclusion is that implementation, I hope we'll get initialing, signing, and ratification. But the implementation will be slow. One shouldn't give up on that, because implementation of these agreements, as I've mentioned, is so difficult. They do take quite a bit of time. If there is clearly non-implementation, I mean, if politicians say, no, you know, we've signed it and that's it, then we would go into a very nasty period for relations between the EU and Ukraine, but I hope that that won't happen. But reform through integration with the EU is probably the only feasible way of modernizing the Ukrainian economy. And basically what we're all interested in is raising the welfare of Ukrainian citizens. It's probably the only feasible way over the medium and longer term of raising levels of prosperity in Ukraine, especially now that Russia seems to have opted for another decade or more of stagnation. So my conclusion is that it's going to be rather difficult, but it is the best bet for Ukraine. I think the EU should make a bit of an effort in this area. It should make a bit of an effort on financing, because change is always very expensive. I mean, if you look at the proposals of the Commission on the budget, there is an increase foreseen for assistance to Eastern Europe. That really needs, if progress is made in Ukraine, that really needs to be rethought. And the usual financial institutions must be prepared to come in as well. I think one should be maybe slightly less... that the criticism which the EU is bound to make on non-implementation or slow implementation needs to be considered carefully. It seems to me that this agreement is so vast that you need prioritization in the agreement. You need to say what is really important, let's do that first, and not start criticizing on all the other things which Ukraine is not doing. So I think those are important. And then, of course, and that's my last sentence, Chairman, it would help Ukraine so much. And I remember the same thing. I remember standing in queues in Poland, in Senatowska, when it was raining and it was muddy, trying to get Belgian visas for Polish friends. And that was really horrible. And so we should try and be helpful to Ukraine on visas and free movement, because that's what Ukrainian people want, and I think we should try to deliver. Thank you. Oh, I didn't answer your question. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Thank you so much. Thank you also very much for praising the Polish model of transformation and promoting this to our Ukrainian colleagues. And now we